All right, buckle up for a deep dive into a Supreme Court showdown, Bennett v. Speer. It's a story about farmers, fish, and a law that usually protects those fish.
It's a fascinating case.
So picture this. You're in the Klamath Basin.
Oregon and California.
Right on the border, yeah, where farmers depend on the Klamath Irrigation Project.
A huge network of canals and reservoirs.
Keeping those farms alive, basically. But there's a twist. That same project impacts endangered fish. The Lost River sucker and the Shortnose sucker.
Talk about competing demands on a limited resource, right? You've got farmers who need that water and these endangered fish who need it to survive.
And that's where the Endangered Species Act steps in the ESA. The Fish and Wildlife Service, the folks in charge of protecting those species, they issue what's called a biological opinion.
And their conclusion, the Klamath Project was putting those fish in danger, jeopardizing their existence.
Jeopardizing, wow. So the Bureau of Reclamation, who runs the project, they have to follow the FWS recommendations, meaning water restrictions for farmers.
Serious consequences.
Imagine that. You're a rancher, you rely on that water, and suddenly you're facing limits that could hurt your livelihood, your whole operation.
Yeah.
And what if you're convinced the science behind those restrictions is, well, maybe not so solid?
And that's where it gets interesting.
What do you do?
These ranchers did something unexpected. They fought back, and they used the very law that seemed to be causing their problems, the Endangered Species Act.
Hold on. They sued under the ESA, the law designed to protect the very fish they were supposedly harming by using the water.
You got it. It all comes down to standing in the legal world. You have to have a real stake in the case to bring it to court.
So it's not like we could sue over, I don't know, the price of coffee in Brazil.
Exactly. You got to be directly affected. These ranchers, they argued that the water restrictions based on what they believed was shaky science were causing them direct economic harm. They said that harm gave them the right to challenge that biological opinion under the ESA.
Okay, but how does a rancher's economic interest fit into a law that's all about protecting species?
That's the million-dollar question. There's this legal test called the Zone of Interests test.
Zone of Interest.
It's a hurdle you have to clear if you want to sue under a certain law. You have to show that your interests align with the purpose of that law, that you're in the zone it aims to protect.
So were these ranchers' economic interests in the ESA zone? Seems like a long shot.
And that's what makes this case a game changer. The Supreme Court had to decide. Could an environmental protection law like the ESA also cover the economic concerns of folks impacted by it?
Okay, drum roll. What did the court say?
They sided with the ranchers. It was a landmark decision, a real turning point. They acknowledged that economic interests can be connected to environmental ones, and those economic interests deserved consideration under the ESA.
Wow, I'm trying to process that. How do they justify that?
Well, they looked closely at the ESA's citizen suit provision. It says any person can start a lawsuit to enforce the law. The court saw that broad language as a sign that Congress wanted to empower lots of different people and groups to make sure the ESA was being followed.
So it's not just environmental groups who can sue under the ESA. Anyone who feels negatively impacted could potentially take action.
That's the idea. The court was essentially saying that protecting species and avoiding unreasonable economic burdens don't have to be at odds with each other. They even pointed to that part of the ESA about using the best scientific and commercial data available, suggesting that this was meant to prevent unnecessary economic hits while still protecting those species.
So the ranchers arguing that the science was flawed were saying the agency didn't use the best data. And that led to their economic woes.
Exactly. The court found that argument placed those ranchers right under the ESA's protective umbrella. It was a pretty clever legal strategy, and it worked.
My mind is officially blown. This feels like the court just expanded the reach of the ESA in a way nobody predicted.
They definitely broadened the understanding of who has standing to sue. They acknowledged that a law about protecting the environment could also be used to protect the economic interests of people affected by how that law is carried out. But there's more to this case.
Right. There's another piece to this puzzle. Final agency action, wasn't it? Before we get ahead of ourselves, let's break that down. Why could those ranchers even challenge the biological opinion in court in the first place?
Final agency action. We need to talk about the Administrative Procedure Act, the APA. Under the APA, you can only challenge an action taken by a federal agency in court if it's considered final. That means it's a concrete decision with actual legal consequences.
So it's not like they could sue over like a suggestion or an internal memo. It had to be something that directly impacted them.
Right. That action had to trigger legal obligations or have a real effect on their rights. The court decided that the biological opinion fit that description. It was a final agency action.
But it seemed like just a scientific report. How did that become a decision they could legally challenge?
Well, even though it was rooted in science, that biological opinion had real-world consequences for the Bureau of Reclamation. They were legally obligated to follow its recommendations. It wasn't just an analysis. It had teeth.
So because the biological opinion directly influenced what the Bureau did, it became something the ranchers could legally go after.
Precisely. The court recognized the power that biological opinion had and said it met that final agency action standard under the APA.
This case is like peeling an onion. Each layer reveals something new and intriguing.
It really shows how different legal concept standing, the zone of interest test, and final agency action can all come together to create a landmark ruling with far-reaching implications. Welcome back.
We're digging deeper into Bennett v. Speer, a case that's still shaping how we think about environmental law.
Yeah, it's amazing how a fight over water in one part of the country can have such a big impact on the balance between environmental protection and, you know, economic realities.
So when we talk about the ripple effects of this case, what do we mean?
Well, you know, landmark Supreme Court cases often have consequences that reach far beyond the specific facts of the case itself. And Bennett v. Speer is a perfect example. One major change has been a surge in lawsuits targeting biological opinions.
Those scientific assessments from the Fish and Wildlife Service.
Right, the ones that can really dictate how agencies manage projects that might affect endangered species.
So before Bennett v. Speer, those biological opinions were kind of under the radar, and now they're in the legal spotlight.
Exactly. The court's decision basically opened the door for anyone with a legitimate economic interest to take a closer look at these scientific assessments.
And potentially challenge them in court.
Right.
So now we're seeing more industries like logging, mining, agriculture. They're all saying, hey, these biological opinions are based on bad science, and they're going to hurt us financially.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using Bennett v. Speer to back them up.
You got it. It's definitely making the legal landscape a lot more complex. You've got environmental protection and economic concerns constantly bumping up against each other in court.
Sounds like a lot of lawyers are brushing up on their Endangered Species Act knowledge. But it's not just the number of lawsuits, right? It's also about the arguments themselves. What kind of new legal strategies are we seeing?
Well, one big shift is the increased focus on the quality of the scientific data that's used in those biological opinions. Remember, the court in Bennett v. Speer really emphasized using the best scientific and commercial data available.
Right.
So now anyone who's challenging those opinions has to present really strong scientific evidence if they want to be taken seriously.
So it's not enough to just say, you know, this is going to hurt my profits. You have to back it up with solid evidence that the science itself is flawed.
That's the new reality. It's really raised the bar for these legal challenges, making them a lot more scientifically complex.
But hasn't this also pushed the agencies to be more careful about the science they use in biological opinions?
That's a great point. It's possible that the threat of lawsuits has encouraged agencies like the Fish and Wildlife Service to be more rigorous in their scientific analysis.
So it's like a checks and balances system. The courts are keeping the agencies accountable for their scientific work.
Exactly. It's created a more dynamic relationship between science, law, and policy. Scientists are no longer working in isolation, you know. Their findings are being tested and challenged in court. And that can actually lead to improvements in the scientific process itself.
Interesting. Okay, I'm seeing how the legal gears are turning here, but let's step back for a second. What does all this tell us about the bigger picture, the relationship between economic interests and protecting the environment?
Well, I think it highlights the fact that these two things aren't always at odds with each other. For a long time, they've been seen as a zero-sum game, like someone always has to lose.
Yeah, it's always jobs versus the environment or the economy versus the planet.
Exactly. But Bennett v. Speer suggests that we need to find a more nuanced perspective. It recognizes that economic and environmental concerns are often interconnected. And if we want to find real solutions, we have to take both sides into account.
So instead of always approaching it as a battle, maybe we should look for ways to align economic and environmental goals.
That's the idea. It's time to move beyond that old either-or thinking. We need a more holistic approach that recognizes how interconnected these issues really are.
Can you give me an example of what that might look like?
Sure. Let's go back to the Klamath Basin. Instead of just pitting the farmers against the fish, what if we explored ways to improve water management that actually benefit both sides? Maybe there are new irrigation techniques that save water and still meet the needs of farmers. Or maybe we could invest in habitat restoration that boosts fish populations.
And that could create new economic opportunities through things like ecotourism or sustainable fishing, right?
Right. It takes collaboration and creativity and a willingness to move beyond traditional approaches.
It sounds like Bennett v. Speer, while shaking things up legally, could also lead to a more collaborative and constructive way to face environmental challenges.
That's the hope. By recognizing that both economic and environmental interests are valid, this case has opened up new possibilities for finding solutions that are more balanced and sustainable.
Okay, I'm feeling a little more optimistic about the future now. But didn't the court's decision in Bennett v. Speer also raise some concerns? Weren't some people worried that it would make it harder for the ESA to do its job of protecting endangered species?
Oh yeah, that's a valid concern. There was definitely some worry that broadening who can sue under the ESA could lead to a flood of lawsuits from industries that just want to weaken environmental protections.
So the fear was that giving more power to economic interest could end up undermining the very law that's supposed to protect endangered species.
Right. Some critics argue that the decision could end up tipping the scales in favor of economic interests, even if it means harming the environment.
It's like a double-edged sword.
It's a valid concern, for sure. The challenge now is making sure that the ESA remains a strong tool for protecting endangered species, while also acknowledging the very real economic concerns of people affected by it.
So we need to strike a balance. Use the ESA's expanded reach to promote both environmental and economic well-being.
Exactly. It's a balancing act, and it will require ongoing conversations, compromise, and a commitment to finding solutions that work for both people and the planet.
All right, welcome back to The Deep Dive. We've been on this journey exploring Bennett v. Speer, a case that really shook up the world of environmental law.
It's a case that's still making waves.
Definitely. We've talked about standing, zone of interests, final agency action, you know, all that legal stuff. And we've looked at the big picture implications for balancing economic interests with environmental protection. But let's get down to brass tacks now.
Let's see how it's played out in the real world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can we dive into some specific examples of how Bennett v. Speer has actually been applied?
Absolutely. One that really highlights the impact of Bennett v. Speer involves a tiny fish you might have heard of, the Delta smelt.
Oh, yeah, the Delta smelt.
It lives only in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, right here in California. And it's become a symbol of this whole struggle between using water for people and protecting endangered species.
I've heard about those water battles in California. They get pretty intense.
Oh, yeah, they do. The Delta smelt is on the verge of extinction. And because of that, restrictions have been put in place on how much water can be diverted from the Delta.
Which is crucial for agriculture and cities.
Absolutely crucial. So you can imagine those restrictions haven't exactly been met with open arms.
So where does Bennett v. Speer fit in?
Well, after that decision, a number of water districts and agricultural groups, they decided to file lawsuits challenging the science behind those restrictions.
Restrictions meant to protect the smelt?
Right. They argued that the restrictions were based on flawed data and that they were causing serious economic harm. And they were using Bennett v. Speer as the legal basis for their suit under the ESA.
So they were saying, hey, our economic interests are being hurt, and we think the science is questionable, so we have the right to challenge these regulations.
Exactly. And you know what? In some cases, those lawsuits have actually been successful. They've forced the agencies to go back, reevaluate their scientific assessments, and even make changes to the water management plans.
So Bennett v. Speer has really had a tangible effect on how water is managed in California.
It's definitely had an influence. It's given water users more leverage to demand strong scientific backing for those regulations that affect their livelihoods. That's led to more thorough analysis and greater transparency in the decision-making process.
That sounds like a good thing. But hasn't it also led to more conflict, more lawsuits, which could actually slow down efforts to protect species?
That's a valid point. There's a definite tension there, right? We need to act quickly to protect endangered species, but we also need to make sure the regulations are based on solid science and don't cause unnecessary economic harm.
A tough balance to strike.
It really is. But cases like Bennett v. Speer have forced us to confront these tough questions and to look for more nuanced, more collaborative ways to address environmental problems.
Well, it's not just about who wins or loses in court. It's about using the legal system to spark a more informed and productive conversation about how to balance these different interests.
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes those conversations lead to solutions that benefit both the environment and the economy.
Are there any real-world examples of those win-win situations?
Let's go back to the Klamath Basin, where Bennett v. Speer all started. Remember, that region was facing a lot of conflict between the farmers and the fish. But in recent years, there's been a noticeable shift toward cooperation.
Really? What prompted that?
Well, part of it was simply recognizing that the old way of doing things, the constant fighting, the lawsuits, wasn't really working for anyone. The lawsuits were draining resources, creating tension, and not actually addressing the root causes of the problems.
So everyone was getting tired of the fighting and decided to try something different.
Essentially, they realized that if they wanted lasting solutions, they needed to involve everyone. The farmers, ranchers, tribal representatives, environmental groups, scientists, and the government agencies, and actually work together to find a plan that addressed everybody's needs.
That sounds like a huge undertaking. Did it work?
It did. After years of negotiations, they developed the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement.
The agreement?
Right. A comprehensive plan with a focus on restoring fish populations and also ensuring a stable water supply for agriculture.
That's impressive.
It involves a lot of different strategies. Habitat restoration, improved irrigation techniques, even economic development projects to help the region transition toward a more sustainable future.
It's amazing. They went from a heated legal battle to a cooperative restoration effort.
Exactly. And, you know, while the agreement has faced some challenges along the way, it's a huge step forward in finding a more balanced and sustainable approach to managing the resources of the Klamath Basin.
I love hearing stories like that. So maybe Bennett v. Speer, even though there were those initial concerns about weakening environmental protections, has actually sparked some positive changes.
I think that's a fair assessment. It's forced us to acknowledge the complexity of these issues, emphasize the importance of sound science, and look for solutions that work for both people and the planet.
Well, that's a fantastic note to end on. We've explored the intricacies of Bennett v. Speer, its real-world impacts, and its enduring influence on environmental law. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you've gained a deeper understanding of this landmark case and its legacy, which continues to shape the world around us.